Hello, Leo, and Leo Rising, and welcome to all of us here. Your 2021 annual reading. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for the next hour or so. Here to talk about the remarkable, beautiful, and challenging astrology that you have been facing, and what may manifest as a significant improvement in 2021. 2020 was a bitch, wasn't it? Man, there was some crazy stuff going on, and I have been concerned about Leos mainly due to the concentration of events in Capricorn in 2020. Let's go over those a little bit, because it leads into one of a couple of main themes in 2021, and there are a few signs, Cancer being one of them. I gave a detailed discussion of this in Cancer. I'm going to take it from a different angle for Leo, but that is one important commonality is the intensity with which the activity in Capricorn has impacted you and then leads into a whole new era in 2021 and going forward into the Aquarian era of now through sometime in 2044. I'll be 80, hopefully still sitting here doing this, or maybe not. Doing something else. I'll be an old rocker playing in some club in whatever's left of Manhattan. Anyway, so enough fantasy. Let's get to reality. As you know, two events, series of events, but really two events with this just tectonic force have exploded in Capricorn, and they are over, but they have kind of opened up another reality, and that other reality needs to be considered in the context of the past. Past is not quite over. So the sixth house in astrology is one of the least favorite of the ancient astrologers. I work with the sixth. I love the sixth. I think the sixth is a great place to be. However, from the standpoint of classical astrology, it's considered one of the most difficult houses. And in modern times, this translates into the house of health, well-being, and work. And it has been a heck of a time for everyone regarding these things, though in particular, when you have Capricorn there, there's just been a lot of stress on the well-being front and on the work front, both. And stress is the most important thing for you to figure out what to do with and what to do about it. So the two seminal events of 2020 in Capricorn included the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto in Capricorn. That was on 1/12/20. And that's the thing with the fracturing effect that we have felt. The splitting of the world into pieces, the shattering of any meek remaining semblance of corporate and governmental accountability, there is now none, and then the digital wave cresting and crashing over our heads in the form of a tsunami tidal wave and lots of flooding that has basically washed the ground out of our being. So you depend on a highly structured work environment for your ideal productivity, and you like it. You know, there's a lot of responsibility involved for you at work, and as I've said many times, Leo is a completely misunderstood sign. The Leos who are on the big ego trip are fewer and further between than you might think, and the Leos who spend their entire life holding everything together are much more easily found. And Leos can go through a lot of stress and a lot of burnout, working till 11 o'clock every night, trying to hold the world together. And there's a very close relationship between your ability to regulate your workflow and your responsibilities and your stress at work and your ability to maintain your well-being. And they both depend on a measure of structure that has been very difficult to find, very difficult to access, because we are in the Kali Yuga and the world is crumbling on itself, and there is very little unity to be found among the people, among the workers, among the humans who are making it all happen, and a great deal of unity and no accountability on the part of the people who are making all the changes happen. And so you are likely to be in a position where you're getting the brunt of things rather than credit or the money or anything like that. You're catching the butt end of reality, and this has put you under a considerable duress. The second major event in Leo was in Capricorn that affected you in this regard was a series of conjunctions between Pluto and Jupiter. And normally these would be have a kind of enlightening effect and would be very helpful, but the whole thing took place in Capricorn, and in Capricorn, Jupiter is in a little bit of rough shape, not at its best, not able to manifest the kinds of potential that it usually can because it's very hemmed in. It's Jupiter in a sign that said that Saturn rules, and so this is not easy. And this is the source of my concern, and so though you have entered a new era, you need structured time of rest and recuperation, and structured time of relief from your responsibilities. The body does keep the score. And you need measured, balanced use of your energy. And so it may seem as if you have hit a limit just when you have also reached the point of your greatest possible potential. Those two ideas working simultaneously can be found in Jupiter and Saturn entering your seventh house simultaneously. So the combination of forces that were drawing the most energy from you and the most output and putting you in this situation where you just had to deal with things that seemed way above your pay grade and potentially beyond your abilities have now shifted into another house, and that is a real wake up. And the thing it may be a wake up of is, okay, you have limits, and how do you perceive that as a positive? How do you work with those limits as a benefit, as a gift, rather than as a thing that frustrates you? And one of the methods for that is going to be about spreading out some of this responsibility that you tend to take on. Now, I do recognize that it can be difficult spreading out responsibility at all, because we're living in this time of fragmented reality when there are, let's say, limited rudimentary and sometimes completely dysfunctional notions of work ethic, which could even be an oxymoron in our time in history, since everything now seems to be a matter of either struggle or grabbing power and money. And so you are more on the handling the struggle, including the struggle of others, because whatever your work does, it puts you in a position where you have to be part of a complex accountability structure and also take on more than your share. Just how it is. And it turns out that there's not a lot of people that you can count on to distribute things to that don't in turn cause more problems than they solve. However, this becomes the imperative with Jupiter and Saturn in your seventh house, orienting on the right people, and it is better to experience a delay and find one or two of the right people than it is to rush into a situation where you've got, 10 or 11 of the wrong people who then do little other than burn you out. So a balance here is necessary, but in any event, whatever you are doing, I believe, my perception of your charts, my reading of your charts, is it is time to pump the brakes on commitment and responsibility and focus your efforts on wellness, on taking care of yourself. And this will at least give you an organizing principle, and it will serve as a point of demarcation between one era and the next, where it was just wave after wave of responsibility and endless work, but not necessarily rewards for that. And part of that is the times that we are in. Part of it is your setup. Though I would like to do my best to guide you through this phase into the next phase, where you are able to harness more of the energy of others rather than have your energy dissipate to them. A lot of this is going to involve engagement with people who understand their responsibilities. For that to happen, you need to really understand what is expected of you and go through the history of that and make sure that it's all accurate. And additionally, work within the accountability structure that you are in, whatever that might be, because I know I'm talking to a very wide diversity of people, let's say, on the economic food chain and also on the corporate responsibility food chain, and then also a great many people who are solo practitioners of something. You run your own clinic. You are an artist with your own studio, that kind of thing. So I'm going to do my best to make what I say applicable, but, adapt it as needed. And so what I'm saying here is that whoever you think has expectations placed on you, you need to engage them in some form of either a negotiation process, or you simply make decisions that they have to deal with. For a number of reasons, you are given to willingly embracing highly formal, structured, traditional forms of leadership. And you are at the same time getting really restless with this, and needing to rebel against it. And you saw many reasons to do that over the past 12 months. And those reasons include all forms of incompetence going above you, right? You're aware of the Peter Principle in action, where people rise to the level of their maximum incompetence. I think that's the concept of the Peter Principle. And the ones who become politicians and top executives tend to be the kids in high school who really couldn't do the work that well, really were not that interested. They just were interested in building their resumes and letting everyone else do the work. That is part of how the Peter Principle operates. You're coming from the opposite place. You're coming from the place of being a proud person who wants to do the right thing, being known as a person who does the right thing, and who understands how much there is to get done. Well, that's novel. And so this can have a way of keeping you on the treadmill. And so it will be very helpful if you adapt your ways to the ways you know the world is changing. To understand the ways in which the world is changing, it will be helpful if you take a step back and get some perspective and do things like map out the people around you, the people who in any way help you, who in any way report to you, who you consider colleagues or who you consider clients, who and to whom you are in any way responsible for something, which again can include a combination of higher-ups or clients or funders or whoever it might be, who would be in a position to hold you responsible in some way, and make a literal physical, like on paper, map of these people and circumstances, and make sure that when you draw a line between you and them, that you understand who owes who what, and ask yourself, with each of these lines, imagine a paper with a bunch of circles drawn on it, people's names on it, and some type of a vertical hierarchy, and then like lateral, you know, it has to go up and down and left and right, right, to account for places where there's not power wielded, but where there is energy in some way distributed, and ask yourself which way that energy is flowing. Is it flowing toward you? Is it flowing away from you? Is the work flowing toward you, or is the work flowing away from you? And if you're in a solo practitioner situation where there's not a lot of people, which is going to include some of you, ask yourself what it is reasonable to demand of yourself in terms of hours and output, and doing this thing that I hardly ever advocate, which is work-life balance. And the reason I don't advocate work-life balance is I think work is an essential part of life, first of all, especially of your life, and that integrating your responsibilities into your capabilities and available resources is much, much more important than balance. It is a form of balance, but it is an advanced form of balance where there is an understanding of all things influencing all other things. So this is a thing to be mindful of. And in this mind map of all things influencing all other things, you do tend to be the battery on which everyone draws when they think they've had enough and they're done with whatever, or they've reached their maximum quality and like you've got to edit the whole thing and pull it together. You want to be really mindful of that. It will help you immensely if you find the truly productive people in your environment and choose only them to assign your any responsibilities to at all, and do something that is going to be increasingly important over the next few years, which is phase out or terminate relationships with anyone who is a source of drama, who is a cause of depletion of your resources, or where the flowchart is going in the wrong direction. For example, someone whose assistant gives them assignments rather than taking up their own responsibilities and finding out what they can possibly take off of your plate, rather adding more to it, that always deserves a smack. Not to be too top down here, but when the underling is assigning things to the boss, that must be corrected. And it is possible that that is some of what is happening. So moderate all of this. This is crucial to map this out and to see what is going on. The turning point has come. The change in the weather and the era has happened in the form of the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction right in the first degree of Aquarius opposite your sun or your ascendant. Regardless of what degree your sun is in Leo or what degree your ascendant is in Leo, your opposite territory, your environmental territory, begins with the beginning of Aquarius. And there are certain properties described here. And this intense activity in Capricorn, which happened mainly in January, April, June, and November, were the big peaks. I can't believe it's all behind us. And I have trouble reconciling the condition that the planet is in, particularly the small business angle of the planet. I don't like the word community used for things, but small business people, where their business is as much about the doing as it is about paying their staff and paying the bills, or just paying themselves and paying their taxes, has taken the beating in 2020. And very large business tends to be doing just fantastic because they are essentially sweeping up all the family farms and inventing agribusiness, as occurred during the Great Depression of the 1930s and early, the 1930s. By 42, it was over because something else had happened. But in the ensuing 10 years, many small things, small, beautiful things, were consolidated into very large, ugly things. There is an important element of your chart to understand, which is something that is in force all the time. It's part of the natural layout of the Leo solar chart. And, you know, maybe you haven't heard of this discussion before, but I consider the solar chart to be the chart of the sign itself. So the positions of the signs in association with the positions of the houses creates a unique mandala for each of the signs. So when you go to the next sign, everything turns one house, and this changes. The signs are so radically different, and the houses have such different placements and necessities that every sign is absolutely distinct from the previous one. And when we look at the chart for Leo, there is a vulnerability in your eighth house. The eighth is one of the most difficult houses to get a grip on in any event, and it is the scene of almost all selling out. We call selling out, where someone thinks they have a price, and the price is too low. So the eighth is in described in the first modern astrology text from 1647, the house of death, dowry, and the substance of the bride. So it's wills, trusts, estates, the transfer of wealth between families through marriage, between the generations through inheritance, and between families through inheritance. And then this, in the 19th century, morphs into a discussion of the value of sex, commodity sold as part of the marriage agreement, and therefore any transaction where sex and money happen in the same thought or gesture. In the eighth is also the house associated with, therefore, by extension, any contractual arrangement. And this is someplace that you simply must guard. It is challenging enough to have Pisces here, because you tend to have an altruistic viewpoint on things. And a belief in the inherent goodness of people in some way. And that is wonderful, but it rarely pans out. And further, you have two planets here that represent really three, and they're interestingly very closely related. One is Nessus, a centaur planet, the third centaur planet. The next is Neptune, and the third is Borsisi. And these planets all have a Neptune-like flavor, and the Neptune-like flavor is that it is easy to go into denial, it is easy to be deceived, and it's easy to be a little delusional about the nature of what is going on. And this is where a great deal of your energy goes in all of these contractual type of arrangements. And so what I suggest you do, first of all, is a thorough review of all of your current contractual arrangements. And I know how insane these things can be. Contractual arrangements that compel you to do impossible things, for example, are entered into and signed all the time, and all you have to do, you just have to hold your nose and pretend and stuff like this. But still, I suggest you do a thorough evaluation of your existing commitments in the personal realm and in the business realm. And that second, that you implement a thorough process of entering into new contractual arrangements with the new people who come into your life and into your world. And that these arrangements include things that protect you and that organize the exchange on the level of value. Exchange on the level of value. In other words, that you get what you pay for and that you deliver what is expected based on what you are paid. There is no way to overstate the possibility for problems in this angle of your life, this crucial angle of reality with Neptune in Pisces. In this world where it is coming down to there is no difference between true and untrue, between grounded factual reality and mere supposition based on nothing, we are all walking on quicksand. And I'm suggesting here that if you got to be on quicksand, you build yourself a little vessel that can, stay afloat, and that you then work your way as far from the quicksand as possible. And this is going to include careful, thorough review of the language and then the way that the commitments are being exercised and enforced. It's all very practical stuff that is designed to conserve your energy and to bring you around to a place where you have enough to do the things that you need to do and to perform your responsibilities in a way that works for you first and then for the people around you. Because you're the type who can be okay for a long time with the responsibility working for others more than it works for you. Let's take a pause, and I'll be back in a minute. So let's move to the upper part of your chart and talk about the two houses that are at the very top of your chart, and those would be houses 9 and 10. They represent the transition from God. It's interesting how this works, but classically, the 9th is the house of the church and the 10th is the house of the government. In modern psychological astrology, the 9th is the house of spirituality and of one's worldview, and the 10th is the house of responsibility and reputation. And these two houses have an unusual way of working together. Mainly because what's supposed to happen in a perfect world is that the power of the 10th, the power that is necessarily exercised in the 10th, the corporate power, the governmental structured institutional power, which becomes vested in individuals in various ways, shapes, and forms, whether you're a salesman or a special agent of the government or whether you're a manager or a boss or whatever it might be, is supposed to be regulated by the ethical quest of the 9th. So they got to work together. And a lot of people skip over the ethical part and the spiritual part and go straight for the gold. The glory, the fame, the reputation, the power, right, the authority, the fame, and all that of the 10th house. That's not going to work for you. You might consider houses 9 and 10 to be part of the same energy system. And here's what that would look like. It's my, let's say, figured out observation from doing quite a bit of this solar house astrology, that where we have Aries in the chart is the place that we seek our self-actualization. The whole chart describes us, but Aries particularly is going to be irrefutably involved in the quest for I am. And you have this very personal quest in a wonderfully broad-minded house. So there is no, let's say, practical separation between your quest for self and your quest for enlightenment, right? For revelation, for direct spiritual contact, and your worldview. This is all very personal for you. Yours is one of the signs that really has no use for religion, because you understand the only real religion is your contact with Prime Creator. You're being informed and responsible to and loving the creative source of the whole universe. And the quest to get there. It's, you don't need someone to tell you the nature of reality. You don't need a book to tell you the difference between right and wrong. You don't need to look in on some scroll to find out about the nature of God. The nature of God is found in you. Who needs anything else? So this is quite real for you. And so what is crucial to recognize about yourself is that for you, the spiritual path is a path of individuality, and it is the personal journey to understanding the nature of reality and your reality, your personal experience of the world. So you are not the Epcot Center type. You are the go on a solo quest type. I could never find out Laurie Anderson's rising sign. It could be Leo, but I never could find it out. But a story from her life, and there's a CD of these stories. She decides one day she was going to hitchhike to the North Pole. I kid you not. And she sticks out her thumb in Manhattan and manages to hitchhike. I think she gets like 20 miles. She starts hitchhiking on airplanes. After a while, there's no more roads. And, she's a small person, and I'm sure travel pretty light. And managed to get almost as close to the North Pole as you can get. And she did so by sticking her thumb out. This describes you more than like the organized tour group of special places in Egypt. In case you haven't figured this out, it would be a very good idea for you to travel solo so that you're unencumbered by the ideas and the ideologies and spiritual framework of others who have completely different views than you do, and completely different personal evolutionary needs than you have, and then along the way meet the people who make the journey what it is. I know from working with astrology clients that this can be a big deal. For example, for people who can't find it in themselves to sit in a restaurant alone and just go out and have dinner. There are people who have never done this. That's not you. And given all of your... Given that houses basically 6, 7, and 8 are all talking about your interplay with others and your accountability and relationships to others, and you need these energy maps to see where the energy is flowing, that it would be quite refreshing for you to not be responsible to anyone but yourself, that being the definition of a vacation. For me, the definition of a day off is I don't owe anybody any work that day. I do whatever the fuck I want because I don't owe another person work. This is what Leo rising Aries on the 9th says. And you have help here. The help you have with Aries on the 9th is Chiron in Aries, which is providing a very welcome focal point for your self-quest. And that self-quest being a quest for the truth as you and only you understand it. You get that the spiritual path, I think, this is my assessment. So just try this on. If I'm wrong, you know, email me. You get that the spiritual path is strictly individualistic. There is no possibility of you saying, well, we believe this, like on behalf of all Jehovah's Witnesses or Moonies or Don Yoga people or whatever. Like, you would not be the one to say, well, we believe that all men are good, whatever. You'd be more the type to start your own thing. But even that, it's like, especially now, the individual quest, the questing element of Chiron also is the journey of self-actualization and is also the healing journey. And it may at times seem lonely that there are others, not others that you can readily exchange views with and all this stuff. But if you proceed in the direction of the solo quest leads you to a state of inner awareness that then makes it possible for you to relate to others who are on a quest of inner awareness, that is an ideal state for you. And many, not all of the things, really. I mean, I can barely think of a thing that anyone could learn that does not have the potential to be applicable to anything that they might choose to do. You know, if you're leading an integrated life, everything becomes a learning experience. One of the metaphors for this is like, let's say, you know, you are planning a trip to some sacred spot in the world, or to consult a teacher, or to consult an oracle, or whatever it might be. Every single step in the process becomes part of that ritual. It's all part of the same dharma, such that packing your bags for the journey is as important as the darshan ceremony with the teacher. This is in Greek known as the theoria. It's the it's the root of the word theory. Let's get the etymological take on that, because the Chiron in Aries in the 9th is just this spectacular vision of the theoria. Etymology. This is not exactly an ad, but I wholly, completely, and fully endorse the Etymology Online Dictionary by Douglas Harper. Spectator review. Okay. Looking at viewing the sideshow spectacle. Okay, so the journey concept, I'll read you this definition. The journey concept of theoria, I'm going to write to the author about this and ask him. So from the 1590s, the word theory means conception or mental scheme. From late Latin, theoria. Jerome, from Greek, theoria, contemplation, speculation, looking at, viewing. A sight, a show, a spectacle, things looked at. From theorian, to consider, speculate, look at. From theoros, more Greek, spectator. From thea, view, see theater, or horan, to see, which is possibly the proto in from pie root, pi root, to perceive. Earlier in this sense, late 15th century, principles or methods of science or art rather than its practice, first recorded in the 1610s as in music theory, which is the science of musical composition apart from the practice or performance. I guess you could call it a science. Music theory is one of the most interesting things that I've ever involved myself with. Sense of an intelligible explanation based on observable reasoning is from the 1630s. This word has kept its meaning. But my understanding that even long before all of these documented usages, right, that's what etymology has to be. It has to be the documented usages. The theoria was the journey, and all that you witnessed and saw and experienced and did, all was part of the same spiritual quest. And this is one of the most spectacular parts of your chart right now, because where the idea of the spiritual quest gets lost is where it must be someone else's quest. Whether it's traveling partner, whether it's the tour guide leader of Power Places Tours, whatever the hell it might be, the tour guide on the bus, and you know it must be personal, and you are being called to do this. Now, I get it's like tough times for going places now. Hopefully that's not going to last forever and you won't need to put poison in your body to get on an airplane. But I suggest you really stretch this as much as you can. And if you have any chance to get to one or two of the places that you must go to, that you do it as soon as possible and plant your feet on the ground. If there's people that you must meet, get to them, not on Skype or Zoom. Get to them in person and meet them. Because this Chiron in Aries will last for about 5 more years, but that's quick these days. And you want to get this energy while it is fresh. Now, there's another angle to this, which is that there is a planet here called Salacia. And we're going to include my article on Salacia on the resources page. For this set of readings, and my take on Salacia, which is supposedly not the root of salaciousness, because there's two concepts which have merged into the same sounding word. One involves salt. One involves to stand out and to leap out. And the word salacious means essentially inappropriate sexuality. But the goddess Salacia, the nymph goddess, consort of Neptune, was an absolutely proper person. So there's nothing salacious about Salacia. And you're going to read a lot of bad delineations on the internet that conflate these two things. So at the request of a reader, I went through all the layers of this and worked with Douglas Harper, the author of Etymology Online, learned a lot about etymology from doing this. My delineation of Salacia is sexual maturity. It's this process of negotiation of, and it is conjunct Chiron now in your house of self-actualization, spirituality, and the quest, the spiritual quest. And what I would say, and if I am known for very few teachings, one of them would be that there is no spiritual progress unless there is sexual integration of all feelings, thoughts, and ideas sexual as part of the self-actualization process, which in itself is the root, the trunk of the tree and its entire root system of spirituality. Because how can you be spiritual if you're not real? And we know there's too damn much spirituality that is completely out to lunch, and too many teachers who are teaching things, they have no direct experience with, because it might sound good, it could be nice, it would be wonderful if things were that way, it's very idealistic, and or it gets a lot of attention. But the point is that this is a challenging topic. Very few people actually like it. Even fewer feel like they're qualified to talk about it. But for you, it is essential. And Salacia is going to be moving through your ninth for another 20 years, long after Chiron's gone. So it's essentially a lifetime placement. And this is a reminder that, if you want to grow, your sexuality also must grow. And if you want to reach a spiritually enlightened state, your sexuality must come with you. It must not be cast off into the shadow realm. It must be kept in the realm of the light, which is very much the ninth house. And it is essential to integrate sexuality as part of your cosmic origins, which it is, your immaculate origins and your cosmic origins. All right. So before we get to the 10th, which is quite exciting and a source of potentially endless potential. That's kind of funny. And also where you are rebelling and also where, which could therefore be stressful. Let's just talk about one last aspect. So as you may know, there's been a lot of interplay between Aries and Capricorn for the past few years. And the way this manifests for you is if we go back to the work and well-being angle of Capricorn and seeking the direct, personally relevant spiritual truth of the Aries and the ninth house, those in many ways have been stitched together as one process because there are so many squares extant between planets in Aries and planets in Capricorn. And the one that is therefore your ninth of the spiritual quest and the sixth of your work and your service and your dharma and your seva, the remaining super tight focal point, well, there's two, but I'm only going to talk about one, is Pluto square Eris. And the beauty of this is it's the two slowest moving planets commonly used. Most astrologers are not using like QB1, Quasar, Logos, Makemake, Varuna, Ixion, and all that stuff. But most astrologers are aware of Pluto, and most are aware of Eris. And so these are two that are still in an exact aspect and will be through all of 2021. And the reminder here is to always keep working the edge of your growth. Always go far enough outside of your comfort zone that you are at least in some unfamiliar territory. Always do something a little harder than you think you can do it, particularly in the personal realm, in the healing realm. And to remember that you have to leave that window to chaos open a little bit, right? You know, a lot of people learn things taking hallucinogenic drugs when they were young, for example. And many have completely closed that window of transcendent experience. And while I'm not suggesting this be done through any entheogenic substance, the window is the thing, and all creativity is in some way sourced from creative chaos, and so it's very counterproductive to close that window. You need to leave that window open, if for no other reason than you don't want to be stuck. Now, here's where things get juicy. If this has not been juicy enough, there's a planet called Uranus, which is the planet of inventions and revolutions. So it's almost always active in revolutionary times. Well, we're talking about the revolutions spreading across Europe in the late 18th century, whether we're talking about the Occupy Wall Street movement. Uranus was very active. Uranus square Pluto took place in the early 2010s. And in inventions. And so you'll see that there can be breakthroughs when Uranus is present. Processes of development that go on for years can suddenly give way to the creative breakthrough when Uranus enters the picture. It's associated with science, with technology, with industry, but personally, it's about freedom from the familiar. And looking now at your 10th house, I would remind you of my concept that the way the signs are placed in the solar chart is the mandala of the sign itself. Take all the planets out. I could easily write a whole book just looking at the solar chart. And Linda Goodman did this. This is why Linda Goodman's astrology is so brilliant. It's why Patrick Walker's astrology was so brilliant. They were both masters of the solar houses. That is to say, the chart of the sign itself. And you have Taurus in the 10th house. And the 10th is about accountability and responsibility. And you favor a formal accountability and responsibility structure. You would, for example, even in appearances, you would always dress appropriately for your level of corporate responsibility. You would not, if you were in any way the boss, CEO, manager, you would not come to work in your sweats. You would come to work dressed appropriately for work and would be unlikely to want to be seen not dressed appropriately. So appearances matter, but it goes far deeper than that because Taurus is about substance. Taurus is not just about things looking good on the outside. They must be solid on the inside. And so you, to me, it would seem, therefore, want to make sure that you present yourself impeccably and that you're an extremely responsible person. And this is a source of stress for you. This is not easy for you. And you can adapt to it, but it is it requires ongoing maintenance. And plus, I mean, it makes you just an incredible person to work with because you fucking care. I'm going to guess it burns you up that there's so many people who don't fucking care. All right, now let's add the least Taurian of the planets, due Taurus, Uranus. Kaboom. So this is, first of all, I think going to manifest as restlessness, as wanting to not be so bound up in these structures, not be so bound up in tradition, not be so beholden to the past. And it is calling for a completely new approach to leadership. And here's how this looks. To me, it looks like leadership of ideas. Not any ideas, but ideas that you have worked through and thought through, and possibly ideas that are time-tested in other ways, including like the reapplication of ideas to new situations where they might not seem to fit, but where they can fit quite well. Uranus favors experimentation. Uranus favors curiosity, but Uranus can be chaotic, and so you need to make sure that you are containing the experiments and that you scale your experiments by trying on a small thing and then larger and then larger, and that you factor the whole issue of scale into what you're doing. There's an interesting story from the life of Steve Jobs, who is, of course, the inventor of the Macintosh computer. And he was leader of Apple, which wasn't, it was not the biggest company. There were much bigger tech companies at the time. Who would have thought it would become, you know, bigger than any government? But the designers and technicians and programmers and engineers were a bit stodgy and stuffy. And this is in the Lost interview. He talks about this, and he knew that that there were certain things that were going to make computers successful, the mouse being one of them. And he gets the idea from IBM, and he goes to his programmers and his builders, you know, his hardware developers mainly, and they say, well, can't do this less than $200. So he has to start a team. He has to start a group inside Apple. He has to find the right people to work with, basically. And he creates the Macintosh group inside of Apple. So he's created this bureaucracy that's not, unless he like changes it in some ways, it's not going to do what he needs it to do. And the thing he needs it to do is something new, something interesting, something innovative, something that's going to succeed in a big way. And that, as we all know, was thing one was the Macintosh. And so he's got to form a group inside the company. And what turned out is, well, they could make a mouse for $25. It turns out to be the greatest invention in the history of personal computing. And the thing that distinguishes the Macintosh from everything else, and it's the beginning of Macintosh's success, but he has to get the right leadership group, the right design group. And so this is what I would call using the group quality of Uranus, but the but applying the containment and structure of Taurus. Uranus was not a Taurus back then, but this metaphor just holds perfectly. And so you want to know the people that you're in leadership with, which can mean, depending on who you are and what you do, various levels of collaboration and various types of accountability structures, but you want your leadership group that you lead. And this has got to be exclusive. It needs to be disciplined, and it needs to be willing to experiment. So there's something about your leadership skills, in addition to the activation of Aquarius. And it's good that Aquarius is being activated by Saturn, because Saturn is going to place natural limits on things. It will be very helpful to you. Uranus and Taurus wants to blow up limits and wants to challenge. This is the most challenging thing about Uranus and Taurus, is it kind of wants to say, fuck you to the board of directors or the investors or whoever it is who can't have an imaginative thought to save their life. And you can have an imaginative thought. You don't need to do it if your life is threatened. You can do it any time you damn please, and especially now. And so this is going to tweak the beak of people in power. And you have to be your most impeccable, your most grounded and smoothest presenter of yourself, to make sure that you can keep having the ideas that you have and trying them and doing test runs and still maintain your relationship to those in power. I would, partly as a caution, partly as a sharing a possibility, might need to blow your relationship with powerful people up. You might not be able to stand working in any kind of a corporate structure anymore. You may feel like any such thing is like the house is on fire and you've got to get out. And I would suggest that you honor that and that you monitor your frustration with structure in any form. We see this coming from numerous angles of your chart. Could describe it almost anywhere. Certainly in Capricorn 6, Aquarius 7, that's big, and then Taurus 10. Okay, so that is expressive of some possibilities. What it's this is all looking like is a rearrangement of your entire social pattern as it relates to both personal and work-related stuff. And this has happened naturally. I mean, we've, in a sense, all been forced to rethink the structures of our lives, to rearrange the structures of our lives. And many people are basically being forced out of their previous structures by all of this, you know, World Economic Forum Great Reset shit. And I assure you that the only virus on the loose is the virus of the Great Reset. They're being baldly honest about this heist, but what it has done is it is forcing people to completely rethink everything about how they make their livelihood, how they relate to the corporate community, how they relate to the business community, how they relate to people, to clients, to humans, because this is ultimately where it is at. And so you get a chance to rethink everything. Beautifully drawn by Jupiter and Saturn in the seventh, and your personal quest of Chiron in Aries. All right, let's take a break. Let's wrap up with an homage to Mercury, god of commerce and communication. We are living through a kind of age of Mercury right now, where pretty much every device that we touch would surround us and exist on bedstands and kitchen tables and desks and living rooms and everything else. And in light sockets and all that are all mercurial connected and in some way related to this imperative, this sudden imperative that everything is a matter of commerce and often electrical communication. That, by the way, is my sense of what's going on. While I was on a break for a little while, the World Economic Forum just released its new map of the world. Its new map of the world is how every last thing is going to be digital. Government will be digital. Health service will be digital. Voting will be digital. Every form of participation in society will be digital. This is the world that we live in. This is what's going on. And you need to be adaptive to this. By the way, Uranus and Taurus could also be seen to be about the digitization of authority and work and all forms of, essentially all forms of productivity. Fortunately, you can't wear pixels. And you can't eat bits and bytes. But that's a pretty good pun. Mercury will be retrograde this year in air signs. Mercury is an important planet in your chart because it regulates two of the houses most closely associated with money for you. House 2, ruled by Virgo, which is the house of your assets, mostly your movable assets, money, tools, and so forth, not real estate. And the 11th, the house of the gains of your professional activities. 10th is the house of professional activities. The second from the 10th is the house of the financial gains and remuneration from your professional activities. Other Mercury-ruled houses. I don't think Mercury has any. Libra 3rd has a Mercury resonance because the 3rd house has a Mercury resonance. And to a lesser extent, the 6th. But anyway, so Mercury is an important planet in your life. And this year, Mercury is going to be retrograde exclusively in air signs. It's unusual to have it be so tidy. But working on Gemini a few days ago, I worked that out, and that's how it is. And I think that the rulership of your two money houses by Mercury, again, Virgo 2nd, Gemini 11th, argues strongly for mastery of Mercury. Mercury is about commerce, and Mercury is about communication. Starting from the solar chart, you have Libra on the 3rd house of writing and communication. You can be a beautiful writer if you want, and the nature of your writing is to be beautiful. I don't mean flowery. I don't mean aspiring to be flowery and purple, but rather just nicely built, well said. You probably write like a song lyricist, where you can be efficient and get a lot said in a paragraph or 10 or 20 words. You have Logos in this house. Logos is a slow mover. It takes 307.42 years to go around the sun. That's longer than Pluto. That's a lot longer than Pluto. Not quite as long as Eris, but it's one of the slowest moving of the trans-Neptunian planets. Logos is about making sense. So when you combine that with Libra, where it's going to be for a heck of a long time, we're talking about the beauty of the reasoning process. So what I suggest is that you make a point of unpacking your reasoning process and showing the beauty of your reasoning. Let people in on this. I know that normally everybody wants the executive summary. They don't want to know how you got to the conclusion. They don't want to see the work or the notes in the margin. What I suggest you do is give people enough to show them how you got to your conclusion and that you did so in an elegant way. It's fun. It's persuasive. In itself, it is creating a thing of beauty, and you'll be able to check your reasoning process because you've written it down, and you can put yourself in the mind of the reader following it. Libra is relational, as well as about elegance, and ask yourself if they understand it. In fact, you can do little test marketing projects, which I suggest doing, which is making sure that people actually understand what you say. I've done this with very complicated investigative pieces where I will print it out, give it out to people, say I'm coming back in an hour, please read this, and then I listen to all the things they didn't understand in what I wrote, and I fix those things. Because it didn't come across. So you want to make sure that you're coming across. Mercury will be retrograde in your 3rd house. That will be in the autumn of 2021. It will be, so you're working up to that. But all the Mercury retrogrades that you go through are review and revision processes. And Mercury really likes air signs, and it's going to spend more than 6 months. The Mercury retrograde process itself takes more than 2 months. It takes about 9 weeks when you go through the opening shadow The retrograde itself and the closing shadow phase, that's a lot of time for Mercury to be in air signs. And so it's going to start in Aquarius. This is useful. The reason it's useful is Aquarius is new territory for you. And so what Mercury retrograde is going to serve as is a kind of a probe into this new territory of Aquarius. This is probably the most important one of the year. It is coming right up. Let's get the dates from IoSprite. Window events. Mercury. Stations retrograde on January 9th, coming right up. And it stations retrograde. Oh, this is in 2021. Okay, let's try this again. Yeah, we are talking 2021. Mercury stations retrograde January 9th, 2021. It does so conjunct Saturn. This is important. So it's not going to be so neat and tidy. If it starts in 2 Aquarius, it's going back into Capricorn. I've got to check my work on that. No, I'm not. I'm looking at... I'm so sorry. Hold on, please. I'm looking at the wrong... Okay, cancel clear. Mercury stations retrograde on January 30th. But before it does so, it's going to go right over Saturn and Jupiter. And it's going to, it's going to go over Saturn and Jupiter. And so it is going to take you through the territory of Saturn and Jupiter. Then it's going to go retrograde on the 30th and then retrograde back to it's going to tuck into the conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter. Now it really is, and station direct on the 20th. So what I'm saying here is that you get a real probe into this brand new territory of Aquarius, which is the territory you simply must master. While this is going on, Saturn is square Uranus. So all the themes I brought up in the last segment around Uranus in the 10th and needing some constraint and boundaries and containment, needing to have the Macintosh group operating inside Apple computer to get the job done, people who are willing to try to do something, really try, not just try, but actually try, is this Mercury retrograde. This should be quite exciting. And it will be helpful, and you'll learn a lot. And even if it's frustrating, you're going to learn things you need to know. Learn things. And it is vital that each of these Mercury retrogrades serve as a kind of a... probes. That's the only way I can put it. Probes means that you send a ship in, you do a run, you try something out, you ask a question and see the answer you get, you show up at the place and you find out what's going on, you take a survey of people and ask them what they think, you experiment, you do something a little bit off pattern to see what happens, and then you take careful notes of what happens, and you use those careful notes to plan a strategy. For you, communicating and selling things seems to be a very high level of importance, and it is for everyone right now. And most people don't like to be their own salesperson, their own marketing rep. I know how challenging this is, and yet it turns out at the end, you're really the only one who can actually do this. You're the only person actually qualified to do this for yourself. And you run a risk of people just getting it wrong and wasting a lot of your time. So you have to become the message. You have to get the message right. You have to be the one who gets it right, who cracks the code and then sets the linguistic template. That's the hard part. Then you follow what you learned, you morph and you evolve it. perhaps easier said than done, but this should come pretty naturally to you. And what I just suggest is that you appreciate your value, not diminish your value, and recognize that what you're doing matters to people and that you matter to people, even if they don't say anything. They don't often know that it's true. Okay, so then comes Mercury retrograde later in the spring. And that takes place from May 29th to just after the summer solstice, June 22nd. It takes place exclusively in Gemini. Now, as mentioned, Gemini is the house of your proceeds of your professional activities. So we live in this world of people who know how to do things and wish they could sell them. Monetization is what it is called. So it turns out that monetization is one of the most challenging things, because usually marketing goes in the opposite direction. You figure out what you can get people addicted to, and then you give them that. You don't find out how to take the thing of rare beauty or rare value and make that available. So the whole concept of monetization is anti-environment to a society that essentially sells people status, false promises of happiness, sugar, salt, and fat. All the drug ads are selling happiness, right? You see a drug ad, you know, that doesn't sell happiness, they're all selling happiness. White background and the guy playing the guitar, all this shit. You, on the other hand, are taking a thing of value and presenting it to the world. That thing being you, or your idea, or your widget, or your service. And so the Mercury retrograde of spring is where you're going to apply everything you learn from the Mercury retrograde of winter in Aquarius, and you're going to take it to the spring in Gemini, and use what you learned from that experiment and run a scaled-up marketing experiment. The marketing experiment could be anything from selling your thing to the full-on search for employment, which I think is two things. One, it is best if done on a small scale and then scaled up. And then second, go for the positions that avoid, evade, and elude the robotic search. You may be able to find a way to play the game of the robotic search. I was utterly appalled to hear that people are using algorithms to scan resumes, when really what we need to be using is eye contact to scan people and seeing how they actually perform and deliver, rather than running their data through a freaking computer program. I would suggest that you stick to the most human level, anything and anything you're doing, which means do not route people to voicemail, brook the interruptions, answer the phone, no systems, as much personal human contact as possible. Get out among people. It is safe to do so. And meet them. The power of personal meetings is now more influential than ever, because so many people are not doing it. They're depending on all this Zoomy stuff. We're basically just all reducing each other to concepts, pixels, bits, and bytes. And I believe the most enduring relationships are going to be built on the trust of the personal connection. And the personal connection includes the handshake, the eye contact, and the shared meal. the visit to one's home, the visit to one's office. Look, here we are. We're people. This is what we do. And accordingly, making sure that all of your communication is as human, as grounded in the human realm as possible, including any marketing materials, including any resume stuff that you mail out, have there be some personal part of it. Include a photograph. Sign your name to the thing. Follow up with a phone call. Get a lead inside the organization. Work with classical methods like that. The way that we're going, based on this chart, I should put this on the Leo reading since I'm referring to it. WF chart, I will include this thing, and you will see this utterly appalling thing that landed in my email while I was doing this reading a few minutes ago. The way that everything is being driven is essentially robotics. What I suggest that you do is go completely, well, as much as you can, because you can't really go completely, right? Because what we're doing right now is being conveyed through a robot. But I have my way of getting around that, right? I have my way. First of all, it's auditory communication, very intimate. I am 1 inch from the microphone. So you can hear I've got body, right? I'm not presenting myself as data. I suggest you evade the tendency of our times to turn everything and everyone into zeros and ones and an IP address. And that you build your business model around this, even if on some level it is an AI model. Because people are starving for human contact. They are aching in agony for human contact. This is what people need. And this is what you have to offer with your warmth, your dedication, your commitment, your quirky approach to leadership, your deep humanitarian and generous streak indicated by Pisces on the eighth house, which you must guard. You must guard. Be conscious of how much you give away for free. Give some. By all means, you must help people in need, but know your limit there. And take care of yourself above all else. When you have your health, you have the potential for anything. The real problems in life all involve health. So watch your stress. Eat real food. Get real rest. Take care of yourself. Plants. Lots of them. Kitty cats. Dogs. You digging me? The real world. The real world. Places like this. Good food going around. And this is happening. Okay. A pleasure, as ever. Don't miss your rising sign. Bye for now.